Hello and welcome to another episode of the Steel and Punter Podcast. I'm your host, Travis, and today I'm going to share some thoughts about what to do if you're thinking about becoming a business owner, or if you're thinking about starting a side hustle, or if you already are a business owner, and just some things to think about based off of just lessons that I've learned over time running multiple businesses. I think the first thing to think about is your business, is what you're offering unique or special? Is it got some sort of protective moat? Warren Buffett talks about that. He often talks about businesses that he likes to buy. He wants them to have some sort of protective moat so that not just anybody can do it. So let's look at this in terms of dentistry versus opening a pizza shop. The success rate for dental practice businesses is approximately 99.7%. That's how much of the practice loans that get paid back, people that take out practice loans that start off dental practices. That's extremely high. Even if that's slightly overstating things, the success rate's still like 98, 99%. So if you look at pizza shops, pizza restaurants, the success rate of those like 5 years in is something like 20 or 25% success rates. That means the majority of these new restaurants fail. Why is that? So the primary reason, and first of all, if somebody's got an extreme toothache, they have to get that fixed, right? If you have a hankering for pizza, there's a lot of ways to satisfy that. A lot of different places that you could satisfy that at. So one of the big things to think about is, you know, barriers to entry. So if you are in a state that says that only people with a dental license can practice dentistry, which is how most places are, right? Only places with dental, and a lot of states have some rules about, you know, dentists having to also be the only ones that own the practices, which is an even better barrier to entry. But if you're in a state, even a state that allows non-dentist private equity firms to own dental practices, you still have to have a fairly large barrier to entry for that. You've got a big capital contribution. You've got a big knowledge level contribution. You have to have the knowledge of a licensed dentist, right? You've got to have the inputs to actually serve the people. So, you know, x-ray machines, CBCT, CAD CAM, whatever the stuff that you need, you have to have a lot more inputs to provide the service. So now if you think about the availability of competitors, well, places like Salt Lake City and Los Angeles, there's tons of dentists, so the prices are lower. It's a lot more competitive. It's a lot harder to make a really solid living in those places because of how much competition there is. But in a more out-of-the-way place, there's, you know, a lot less competition. So if you're thinking about, you know, opening a pizza shop, well, the problem is there's no barrier to entry. Not only are you competing against other pizza shops, but you're also competing against other restaurants. Anybody can open it up. The capital contribution that you need to open it up is not that high. All you need to do is get a lease and get a pizza oven, and then you're in business. And so even if you're exceptionally good, you don't necessarily have tons of pricing power. If you think about opening a business or owning a business, that's one of the big challenges about non-professional businesses, non-profession-specific businesses, because, again, you have less barriers to entry, a lot more ability for competition. And so that's something that you should really think about. So I remember one consult that I did with a doctor who was looking at being a practice owner, having a second location, and he was making $400,000 a year, and he was really into rental real estate, and he really wanted to get involved in owning like more townhomes or something like that. And I said, well, wait a second. You're making $400,000 a year from this one office, and you already have like some good friends that want to move back to the area that would like to work for you and have a second location. And you're talking about buying townhouses, though. So like, okay, who's competing with you in these businesses? In the dental scenario, not a lot of people are going to compete with you. Maybe private equity? Well, okay, just be more personable, be more friendly, be better marketer, be more local than the competition, and you're probably fine there. On the other side, the rental real estate, well, anybody that has capital that wants to buy assets and get rents can get involved in rental real estate. So there's not nearly as much barrier to entry. So if the goal is maximizing your wealth with as little time investment as possible, you know, it makes sense to do more of what you know. It makes sense to invest more in what you're doing yourself. Now, if I think about what gives you life, joy, and energy, that could also be a different thing compared to what'll make you the most money. So one of the largest Facebook groups out there is this like Side Hustles Facebook group for physicians. And it's so fascinating to me because statistically, on average, by far and away, the smartest thing for physicians to do is just to do more of what they train to do. So if that's possible, if you can take more call shifts, if you can take an extra job, if you can work extra hours as a physician, statistically, not true for everybody, but statistically, that's going to make you way more money than doing any other side hustle you can imagine. Again, not always the case, and physicians are extremely smart people, right? So, you know, you could certainly think, well, if somebody's smart enough to go to med school, they're smart enough to come up with some sort of extremely profitable side hustle. And sure, that can be very possible. what I'm simply saying here is don't underestimate the ability of your credentials to earn money on the side. And maybe there's different like things you haven't even thought of before. Maybe you could do something somebody else isn't doing. Maybe you can offer procedures somebody else isn't doing. And it might be a lot simpler than you think. So I'll give you another example. And sorry for the, you know, I should use some more like other examples, like therapists and other, you know, lawyers and stuff. But just another example that comes to mind in the professional space is there was this person who was buying a practice that nobody wanted to be around. It was a rural area. And the person looked at the list of procedures that the doctor that was retiring did. And he noticed, hey, they're not doing this type of procedure. And it's a very basic procedure. So it was extractions, I think. Really physical. You have to yank stuff out. I'm not a dentist, but you know. And so this person realized, oh my gosh, I can increase my production 30% compared to what I'm buying this practice for if I just do this extra procedure that the current person doesn't do. So this wasn't like a genius business idea. This wasn't like you've just come up with the next Google or something, or you've just invented AI or whatever. This is literally like looking at a business in a rural area, realizing they do things really inefficiently and they don't do as many things service-wise that you're able to do, and then just going out and doing it, right? I think it's kind of interesting. It's kind of like when we made the decision to do the financial planning or not. One of the big things that mattered a lot to me is, well, can we be SEC registered? That matters a lot in the world of financial planning, because if you don't get that registration, you have to be registered with individual states, and you've got to answer to each individual state and their unique rules. So it's a real nightmare. It takes a lot of time. It's very demoralizing, to be honest, in my opinion. That's also a barrier to entry. It's also really hard because you have to get to a certain level of registration. You have to get a bunch of clients very quickly, and that's also very difficult to do. So it's sort of like, okay, is this a good business to be in? Well, if there's all this barrier to entry, sometimes things are super annoying and it's discouraging, but sometimes that can actually be, you know, in terms of just business, it can be your friend. So yeah, like it might be really difficult to set up a business. It might be very challenging. You might have to, it might be really big pain in the butt to go get your EIN number or set up an S corp or have to figure out your 401k plan or have to figure out who to hire and who to fire. Like that might be really challenging, but those barriers to entry are also what provide extra abnormal profits for business owners versus folks that don't do it. So just to give you some more encouragement, you don't have to invent it all overnight. So the big thing, I think the first place I would start if I was starting a business is find someone's pain. What is their pain? And can you provide a credible solution to fixing it? Think about student loans. Before student loans, I blogged. It's a really pathetic looking blog called Millennial Moolah for anybody that's bored. And I blogged for a year and a half, almost like every day, about all kinds of stuff. And the most traffic I ever got was like 5,000 visits a month or something like that. And I never made any money at all. And the reason is because I was writing a blog called Millennial Moolah, targeting all millennials about money. That's not super smart, right? Like you're just talking into the ether to millennials. Well, there's like a billion of us or 2 billion or something like that. That's not very specific at all. And I never had any like unique product that I was selling. I never had any specific service that we were offering. And so that went nowhere. What it did do though, is it taught me how to write, and it taught me blogging, and it taught me online marketing, and it taught me how to manage a website and such. What we learned there is I learned skills to help me with the next thing. And the next thing was helping with student loans. And the reason I stumbled into that was because my wife had a lot of student loan debt, and I helped analyze that for her. And then she said, hey, this is really useful. And then I talked to some friends who had a bunch of student debt from some of the schools, the grad schools in Philly that I was living in at the time. And they were like, this is extremely valuable. You just saved me money and I'm so stressed about this. So I was providing a service that relieved people's stress levels. So if you can provide a service that relieves people's stress levels, it'll sell itself. But it has to be a specific pain. So you can't just go out and say, I'm a lawyer. I provide legal services. Nobody wants legal services. Nobody wants that at all because people don't want to deal with a lawyer. No offense. Most people, if you're talking to a lawyer, it's not necessarily a fun thing in most people's mind. Same thing for patients going to the dentist. Most people, that's not their idea of a fun time. If you're at the doctor's office getting your colonoscopy, that's probably not enjoyable. So how do you make that more enjoyable? Well, you help people avoid the stress and the downside risk. So if you're a lawyer, what niche thing can you do that you can be the best at in the world compared to anybody else? well, maybe you are a state of Virginia commercial liability slip and fall defense attorney for privately owned family law firms or family firms or something like that. If you can go super specific and then you can make content about something that's really specific and you can market to a very niche group that needs your services, that has the stress that they want to relieve from themselves and they'll pay for, that's a great business. The issue is sometimes the cost to provide services is too high. So there are scenarios where, you know, let's say you are a physician in an underserved area and the Medicaid reimbursements aren't high enough. You do have to be able to have a business. You do have to be able to have a reasonable standard of living for your family to be able to pay people at your practice. And that matters because otherwise you can't afford to stay in business. So there does have to be a business model. So if you have a really low reimbursement rate for insurance or something, you can make a couple choices. You can accept making less money. Then you can also have to figure out ways to speed up service. Maybe you have to have a volume-based practice if your margins on each individual patient aren't super high. Maybe there's a huge amount of fixed costs. So maybe like that volume play is the smart move. Or maybe you're in an area with a lot of wealthier people and maybe you can provide services that maybe subsidize the rest of the practice. So maybe you have some sort of cosmetic procedures you do or implants or total math restorations or something. And maybe that provides most of the profit from what you do. And maybe the other stuff is sort of like the break-even cost-neutral lead gen that flows into the stuff that makes you actual money. But then you want to think through, okay, if something's lead gen, like let's say hygiene in your place is just for, essentially if you break even on it. Well, if you're capturing 10% of those hygiene cases for very profitable procedures, well, now you've assigned a value to getting a new hygiene patient. So now you can get 10 of those people, you're going to have one $5,000 case out of it that you're going to make 40% profit margin on. So that's a $2,000 profit. So you're saying that each one of those hygiene patients is worth $200. So then you would be willing to have a cost of customer acquisition that would be $200 or less. So these are like ways to think about business. A couple other thoughts too. I would definitely be thinking in terms of how I can bootstrap. That would be the question that I'd be asking. So bootstrap means you're self-funding. And when we say self-funding, that to me also includes people that take out a practice loan. So like, for example, if you're, or a small business loan. So if you're starting out like at a service-based business without a lot of capital needs, then hopefully you can self-fund your own lifestyle. And so like if you think about the lawyer world, the financial planner world, like the white-collar professional services that are not doctors, those folks oftentimes the biggest expense they have is their own personal expenses. So there's a reason that a lot of people that have small practices are married to more people with more stable careers. You see a lot of like nurses married to lawyers, lawyers married to physicians, business owners married to law enforcement or fire department or something like that. You know, and the reason is because that person's stable income provides enough money for living expenses while the other person is trying to get their business off the ground and not making a lot of profit, but still having all the normal living expenses to pay for, like rent and mortgage and utilities and car payments, et cetera. Do you have any kind of support system like that? If you do, you're in great shape and your risk for starting a business is way lower. Now, if you're the primary breadwinner in your family, maybe you have the majority of the salary and most of the expenses come out of your salary. That does raise the stakes a little bit, raises the stress levels a little bit. But if you have enough savings, you don't have to worry about it. So one of the things I like to suggest to people that are thinking about startups is, okay, if you're doing a startup practice, then do you have enough cash savings to cover 2 years worth of expenses? If you do, you're more than fine. And even if you don't, you're probably also more than fine. But a lot of people that are really worried about doing like a just straight up startup, they are kind of over fearful about their situation. I mean, you can get a financing that covers most of the actual costs of the startup. But the thing that people you can't really borrow for as easily as your personal living expenses. So if you have enough money to borrow for your startup, you've got a good business plan, you have done the analysis to see that this is an area that actually needs my services, you know, in terms of a demographic study. And then let's say you've looked at your personal expenses and you know how to cut back on those expenses and you've got at least, you know, X number of months or X number of years worth of cash in the bank ready to cover those expenses while you grow your empire, then that's good enough. That's good enough. And worst case scenario, it doesn't work out. And then you just go back to your old job, what you were doing before, maybe at a different practice, but it'll be fine. And the rewards, if you're successful, are enormous. Control over your time, an asset that you get to sell, you'll learn about business so that it'll allow you to become a bigger business owner. That's been my biggest lesson, is I didn't grow up knowing any of this stuff overnight. My dad was a teacher. My mom was a nurse. We never had anybody that was an entrepreneur in my family. And, you know, if anything, everybody in my family sort of tended to take more of like the safe job path. And so I had to learn by doing. And so we started out, I was a sole proprietor with Student Loan Planner. And then I discovered, oh, I'm making more than $60,000 in profit. I could save money if I changed myself to an S corporation. If you have a successful small business that's earning more than $60,000 of profit, then it probably makes sense to switch over to an S corp. Why? Because as a sole proprietor, you're just paying taxes on everything you earn, and you're paying Medicare and Social Security tax up till, don't quote me on this, but I think it's about $150,000 or something like that. So you're paying 15% of your income and income taxes and state income taxes. So it's brutal. A lot of people start becoming a business owner and they start getting real excited. They're like, hey, I'm successful. I'm making some profit. Hot dog. And then you look and you see your taxes and you're horrified. Why? Let's just say you make that, you know, $150,000 type of income. Again, don't have the tax brackets memorized off the top of my head, but let's say you're in the 20-something percent bracket for federal, and you're in 6 for state, and now you're in 15 for FICA, and so we're at 40-something, and now you're 10% for your IDR payment. You're losing half your income. That's terrible. Half of your income, right? Just because you're the sole proprietor. It's like, well, I thought they like business owners. I thought the economy wants more business owners. Why are they punishing me? Well, if you're making a lot of money, that's why you switch to the S. And the reason you switch to the S corp is because it's still a pass-through. You're still just passing the money right through from the corporation to yourself. But the big difference is you're distributing excess earnings above your wages as dividends, which avoids the 15% FICA tax. So let's just say you have, you know, this $150,000 income. Let's say you're a therapist. Let's say you're a really good therapist, right? $150,000 income for therapists would be pretty baller. But let's say you're making that $150,000, and let's say that the reasonable wage for a therapist is $60,000. So you declare a $60,000 a year wage. You have to file payroll returns. Your tax person can help you file payroll returns, which declare your wages. And you do have to pay the FICA tax on the $60,000 of income, and you'll have leftover profit of $90,000, because $60,000 plus $90,000 is $150,000 of total profit that you made. So that $90,000 of profit that you distribute, you avoid the FICA tax on that. So you're saving 15% of $90,000. So what is that, $13,000? That's really significant savings. It can be enormous. That's not only the best part too. When you do make enough money in your business to set up a retirement plan, you're able to write off a lot of income and protect yourself against the really high taxes of federal, state, and remember IDR taxes, quote unquote taxes. So you can have all this money that you're shielding, which is absolutely tremendous if you're an S corp owner. And you know, one of the reasons we decided to get into the tax business is just because I felt like for people that do ever start businesses, there's just so much that matters more because your marginal tax rate's higher because of student loans, right? So if your tax rate is 20-something percent, but you live in state income, so you're at 30, but now you throw on the IDR payment of 10%, so now you're at 40. Well, anybody who's in a 40% high marginal rate like that has to do a lot of more tax planning than somebody who's not. It's just reality. Some of the things that you can think about when you're getting your S-Corp set up. So just so that folks know, March 15th, I think, is the deadline for setting up an S-Corp, the normal deadline, but everybody does late elections. So just so you know, if let's say you're doing really well this year and you've never set up an S-Corp, it's okay to set it up a little later. You just have to file a late election S-Corp filing. So I've done this many times. My accountants helped me with it. I never did it. But this gets you set up for that right status so that you can write off a bunch of your profit as a distribution of dividends instead of the wages, which saves you money on the Social Security tax. There's other things you can do if you're making enough money in your business. You've set it up in such a way that you're making enough money to set up that formal S-Corp. So what I would really say is this, like, let's say you're still working on making enough money so that you could even have an S-Corp, right? So focus on profit first. What we did with Student Loan Planner that you maybe could do is undercharge initially if you can afford to get good reviews. Because people don't know you, right? If you're starting a business, people don't know that you're good. They don't know what your quality of work is. And so people believe what other people say. And so if you can kind of keep your prices low initially and have people see your work, see your quality, and ask them to review you, and they're going to if you charge less than the value that they're getting, then they'll review you on Google, on Yelp, and whatever it is that is in your industry that people look at. And then, you know, once you have those reviews, then you can raise prices. And the way we've always done it is announce the price increase way ahead of time, and that induces a lot of demand. People book. And then you have that new higher price point. It's a little quieter, but then people get used to that higher price point. And so for Student Loan Planner, we haven't raised our prices in a little while just because I feel like we're at a decent level. Like, I'm not trying to make a killing on this. I'm just trying to make enough money to help a lot of people not die early from stress and have a great team around us that helps get a lot of this stuff done too. So, you know, you have to strike that balance too. And that's another thing I'd tell you as a business owner, especially if you're a people pleaser, kind of like I am, is you do have an obligation to yourself. Just because you're worried about, like, and these can be legitimate worries, right? But you might have like legitimate concerns about healthcare access or legal services access or something like that. And I would say those are very legitimate concerns. But I've certainly hurt myself sometimes over the years health-wise and sleep-wise by like worrying about if I raise the price $100, I'm not going to be able to help anybody. And there's going to be a lot of people that desperately need the service out there that won't get the service and I'm letting them down. And I have all these sort of self-defeating thoughts. And what I would say is to try to say no to those thoughts and tap the brakes a little bit. Like if you are concerned about equity, if you are concerned about helping people who will have less money, then just by the fact that you're concerned about that is putting you already way ahead of most everybody else in business where the sole focus is, I want to make money. And so if you have that heart for helping others, that's going to show, I think, you'll be able to do that. And I think that raising prices to the level of which that you can have less stress and employ people and have a stable business is going to keep you in business and helping others longer, not destroying your business. So that's something to really think about. And sometimes I need to hear that too. But I think that a lot of times we as business owners or people that are interested in business ownership run ourselves ragged and try to carry the weight of the world on our shoulders when it is okay to make a living and provide for your family and provide for your staff and live a less stressful life to give yourself more energy to work for the folks that your business does serve so that it's a long-term sustainable business and not one that you're going to burn out at. So that really matters. So let's say you're in insurance, you have a practice and you take every insurance known to man. If it says insurance on it, you say yes. Let's say one of those insurance companies is absolutely awful for customer service. It takes forever to hear back. They're frequently late on payments. The fee schedule they pay is the worst fee schedule out there. And the question is, should you keep using that person? Well, think about this. Let's do some math. Let's say that somebody's working 5 days a week and all the other insurance companies pay you two times as much money. But let's say there's five insurance companies that you take. One of those insurance companies fills up 2 days a week of your schedule and the other four fill up the other 3 days a week. You could keep 80% of your income, but only work 60% as much of the hours by eliminating that lowest paying insurance company. And anybody who's a dentist is already thinking about what that company is. But, you know, but I frequently have these conversations with people to say, okay, do you have to take that insurance company? Yes or no? If you live in a place like Los Angeles or Salt Lake City, you probably have to. Because if you don't, it's so competitive. You'd have to have some genius marketing or genius niche focus or specialization to be able to attract people. But if you live in a more out of the way area, it is not at all wrong to get paid for your time and your stress levels. It's not wrong at all. Now, reasonable people would have different views as to whether or not that's okay to not take an insurance company that happens to have a lot of lower income people on it. Again, that might not make you feel alive and happy in terms of access issues. But at the same time, maybe there are ways that you can help folks in a way that doesn't involve you bashing your head against the wall with an insurance company. So maybe, for example, it's more efficient for you to work those 3 days a week and then twice a month holding free clinics where people aren't paying. So there's not a huge expectation that you're going to have the same length of an appointment or something. I'm not a professional in these fields, so I have to be careful. But maybe that's a more efficient way to do it. Or maybe it's more efficient here's another way to think about it. When enough providers say no to that insurance company that's ripping providers off or like giving them a hard time, when enough providers say no, you know what that insurance company does? They raise their rates. They only pay terrible rates because so many people say yes. It's just true, right? The only reason why all of these low reimbursement rates exist is because providers are like, sure, I accept it. Enough of them say yes that they feel like they can charge that. So think about what your time is worth. Think about what lifestyle you want to live. Think about what types of clients you want to work with. One of the things that I'll have to admit for a second is, you know, I don't want to sound like a jerk at saying this, but we love hitting the eject button on a client that's not a good fit. Maybe it's because they're a reasonable person and our services are just not a good match for them. And okay, you know, here's your exit door. We wish you well. A lot of times it's very amicable, right? It's just an honest conversation. Hey, you know, you're just not a good fit for the model of our business. It's nothing personal. It's just, we think you'd be better served elsewhere. And sometimes people are real jerks. Like one thing I tell our team is, I tell our team internally, I say 2% of people on the internet are absolutely crazy. And I really mean that. It's at least 2%, but it's not 10. That's good news. Most people are reasonable. Most people are good people, right? But there is a non-zero number of people that will suck all of your joy and they will chew it up and spit it out and leave you destitute emotionally. And a lot of times these are people that are struggling. They're struggling with their own mental health stuff. They're struggling with their own emotions or something bad that's happened in their life. And it's not you as the service provider that's doing the bad job. It's just they're taking it out on you because you are there. And they're paying you and they feel like they can just be frustrated and share their frustrations with life towards you and at you. And a lot of times it's not about what you did or didn't do as a service provider. Sometimes it's just I'm angry and I want to take it out on somebody. And you know what I used to do is take it, but now that we have enough money and enough stability and enough of a reputation that we are going to be fine, I think, if somebody's crazy and is really disrespectful to our staff, is now I just sort of say like, well, if you don't like it, here's the door. And I try to say it in a nice way, but life is too short to accept inappropriate behavior from people, right? It's called having boundaries. And this is something that I've gotten from actually counseling that I've done about struggles with anxiety that I've had in the past, is boundaries are super helpful to have. And then it's not being disrespectful. It's just saying what's acceptable and what's not acceptable to you. So let's say somebody comes in, curses your staff out, makes one of your assistants cry or something like that. You go out to that person very respectfully and just say, hey, I just want to be clear that we think you'd be better served elsewhere. We're not going to accept people yelling at our staff. My staff's really important. You know, I can't have them crying in the middle of the operating room. I understand you might be having a bad day, and I'm sorry that you're having a bad day, but you know, we're not going to be able to serve you. I'm sorry. You got to be kind, kill them with kindness. I think that's a good strategy. But I think a lot of the burnout that happens, right? I certainly see this with my wife, who's a surgeon. The 1 in 50 patients that's following the 2% of the internet's crazy rule. And it's just totally unreasonable. And a lot of times it's not even who you would think. A lot of times it's not somebody who's very low income or very disadvantaged. It's like some random middle-class person who is just absolutely terrible to you. And you're like, why? What did I do? The reason I'm talking about so much of this is staying in business is very hard. There's a reason that people don't stay in business for a very long time. I think part of it is if your business is really successful, it's like pretty awesome to just exit and be done, right? If you think of it, some days I certainly think back and I like think, you know, huh, okay, me retired, my wife retired, us having a villa in Italy, a place in Paris, and like completely focusing on our kids. Sounds great. Where do I sign? Where do I sell the company? You know what I mean? But then I think about, well, what is my purpose? What do I feel called to? What do I feel helps me have energy and live and be excited? And that's why I love doing this, is because, you know, I like working with you guys. I like working with you. I like helping you live your best life. And I feel like that's part of my calling. And so I think a big part of business is trying to figure out, why am I doing what I'm doing? Why do I go through all this stress? Why am I going through this extra side hustle? If it's a side hustle, maybe it's like a goal. Hey, I want to be debt-free. Hey, I want to buy a house with a down payment that's large enough. So you're like working towards something. That's very motivating. If it's a business that you're doing or thinking about doing, maybe you're thinking about like, well, how do I live my ideal life? Like, what does that look like? And that's not an easy answer to answer, and it's going to always change. You know, the reason why you got to be really careful about the naysayers, the negativity, the people that suck your energy, the problem clients or problem patients, you can't let your whole outlook be affected by whatever that negativity is. That's why boundaries are so helpful, is because boundaries protect you. It protects you from having to feel the emotional pain of a decision. And I've experienced this personally. So for example, when a staff member or an employee is like not doing the job and they're having a hard time in their life, but they're not producing, you decide what your boundary is. Okay, are we going to have somebody, you know, have like a sort of one-time warning before we take action? Or is it we're going to take action immediately? So my boundary as a business owner became, do you care? Do you care? Are you engaged? Are you intellectually curious? Are you working hard? And if you're not doing a great job, are you like actively trying to get better? And so when then I communicate that boundary to people, and it's like when the boundary's not met, it's not me being mean. It's me just saying, hey, I think clearly you're, you know, meant for something that does stimulate you and does get you excited and happy. That takes away me having to be a bad guy. Like so many people just absolutely dread firing and hiring. Like I think HR is probably like at least half of the reason people don't become business owners, just being honest. Same thing with the boundaries with the patient that's having a bad day. Patient's having a bad day. She cursed out the staff. Staff's crying. She shares that she just found out her husband has cancer or something horrible, and that's why she's cursing or something like that. It's okay if you open up your boundary. It's like your decision whether or not you want to. But having boundaries is also kind of like a great rule of thumb. Hey, I am so sorry that that's happening to you. That really is something that I just feel really awful about for you. Be authentic, of course, right? So if you're not particularly religious, like just, you know, okay, you know, I hear that. Do you feel like saying something like, I'll say a prayer for him tonight or something like that? I mean, you know, like it just depends. You be your authentic self and then decide whether or not that is worth changing your boundaries over. So probably not. Probably you just need to say, listen, I hear you. I'm sorry you're going through that, but we have a strict zero tolerance policy. And we have a lot of doctors that would love your business. There's a million other doctors out there you could go see. So this is not at all personal, but we do very much wish you well, and we hope you have a better day. And you know what's going to happen is the staff is going to really fight for you and go into battle for you. When they see that, when they see you like standing up for them, that is contagious. So we have like some people too. I won't say their names on the team, but they are really great team members of SLP, and they just are really delightful people. But occasionally this person had a bad habit of not replying to someone promptly. So we do have, you know, expectations so people respond within a, you know, a few business days at the max to clients. Sometimes we've had things fall through the cracks. And so this person missed a couple emails and accidentally archived another one that needed a response. And he thought I was going to fire him because he checked the other boxes of the boundaries, which is like working hard, intellectually curious. Do you care? Are you engaged? Are you trying? Because he checked all those other boxes, it was just a conversation of, well, how do we support you more? How do we put more admin support around you to make sure you don't miss things? Because the person was otherwise a great worker. And that person really was very appreciative. So I think that's another exciting thing about business is you really figure a lot of stuff out about yourself and a lot about how to fix problems. And there's lots of problems that pop up, don't get me wrong. But if you're at all interested in starting a business or growing your existing business or doing a side hustle more intelligently or starting a side hustle, I want to say first that you're capable. Get the negative thoughts out of your head. Know that you just need to focus first on making a profit, doing something specific that has a pain, and that that pain is something you need to be able to solve and explicitly say how you solve it. And then if you can do that, now you want to try what is the best business model. Just try something out. And a great test is, will your friends pay for this? If your friends pay for it, you know it's a good service, right? If you don't feel like you need to offer them a discount or a free link and they are happy to pay it, that's how you know it's really good. So you get to that 60K profit, incorporate, switch over to an S Corp to save on FICA taxes, and then you start optimizing. Then you start deciding, do you want to create a board meeting? Do you want to write off part of your rental, you know, for your board meetings based off the Augusta rule to write off like rental income from your house that you pay yourself? Do you want to do like solo 401ks? Do you want to write off some of your automobiles? Do you want to set up some sort of other tax strategies like depreciation or something or corporate real estate ownership? And then sky's the limit, right? But you got to be making a profit first. And sometimes it's okay to not make a profit right away. Certainly some of the business ventures we're starting are not profitable yet, but most of them are. And collectively, they all are. So it's just important to have a plan if you're not profitable yet. How do you get to profitability? What does that look like? Do I need to raise my prices? Do I need to cut my worst insurance company? Do I need to make sure everybody on the bus is wanting to be there? That's another thing about boundaries is you can have a boundary for your business that anybody that works with you or for you wants to be on the bus. If there's a clear sign that that person doesn't want to be on the bus, you don't want them on the bus. You want them to get off on a bus they do want to go on to. Think about it like this. You're in, let's say you have your small dental practice with your 10 team members. 9 of them love being there. 1 of them doesn't. Is it ethical to keep the person on the bus who does not want to be going on that route? Or do you want to open the door and say, hey, listen, I want you on a bus you want to be on. I want you going in a direction that you're excited about. That's not here. And so that's why we need you to try to find a place that you would be happy with. And they might say something like, oh, no, I promise I'll be. And that never works. It never does. You have to trust your gut and you have to look out for your business, your team members that are engaged, your patients, and that person. So I'm just sharing some things that have been really tough, hard lessons that I've learned, and just in case it helps you. And then I'll say on the tech side, there's all kinds of planning and strategy there. There's all kinds of benefits as a business owner of talking through things like your cash flow, your burn rate, what's your run rate. Run rate is how long you have until you run out of money. And that, for most people, that's not related to a venture capital startup that has $100 million with, that they're burning $10 million a month and they're going to run out of money in 2 years. That's your own personal bank account. You've got your startup that you're doing, your practice startup, and you've got 1.5 years of cash, but you don't know your burn rate. You don't know your monthly spend, right? That's what stuff like financial planning and strategic planning for finances is very important and matters, right? And then asking those questions, like if you're a business owner and you haven't asked yourself the question, well, how many hours do I want to work? What do I want my lifestyle to look like? What do I want my family lifestyle to look like? What is my goal for this? What am I trying to achieve? You know, a lot of these things are their deep financial planning conversations, right? So I really enjoy getting to talk about this with you. One of the biggest mistakes I see with people that are business owners is not thinking about their student loans and how the student loans don't have to get in the way of the business ownership dreams, the side hustle dreams. So if you have student loans, one of the most common conversations we have with student loan consults is, how do we avoid the student debt burden blocking you from your dream of doing XYZ? So if that's you, I'll wrap up today by saying you can go to studentloanplanner.com/book and book a consult with our team and talk about how your IDR plan or your tax filing status or your business ownership doesn't need to get in the way of your student loans, don't need to get in the way of your dreams and your business goals. And then if you want more in-depth, very specific planning, you can go to slpwealth.com/book and you can get ongoing conversations like this that can help you figure out how do you minimize the taxes, how do you maximize income, how do you take away the negative thoughts in your head stopping you from succeeding, how do you confidently go into business ownership not having to be stressed out because you have a plan, you've got a plan for profitability, you've got a plan for how you're going to use those profits, you know about your cash flow, you know what your burn rate is, you know what your run rate is, those kind of things matter. slpwealth.com/book if you want the full level of financial planning, and then the studentloanplanner.com/book if you just want the one-time plan. Thanks, everybody, and have a unburdened, joyous, happy rest of your week.